such sights to show you.
You ready?
Yeah. Sure.
You're like, just fucking do it. It's your birthday week.
I know, though. It is my birthday, so I by law have to be excited.
Yeah,
by horrible people's podcast standards, it's my fucking birthday.
Yeah, hey, I mean, you have a good reason for not being happy, though.
I know, everything's shit right now.
We had to delay a week.
But thank you, everyone, for bearing with us. I couldn't in good conscience.
No, hell no. No, yeah.
Absolutely not.
Like, hey, guys, do you remember Jaws?
or what episode was last, or, you know, the last episode?
October.
It was the House of October built. Yeah.
Like, ooh, also scary, guys, are that movie.
You know what else is scary?
Yeah.
The current state of affairs and the systematic killing of black people.
Right.
In America.
Don't forget the socioeconomic disparity that's leading to these situations.
It's true.
Yeah. Also very terrifying.
Yeah. So, like, reality is a little bit scarier than any movie we could possibly cover at the current moment.
Yeah. Even if the last one was not great.
It was shit.
Yeah.
It was absolutely shit.
You know what's more shit is, you know, everything else.
Yeah. So, but coming back to, you know, kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say heal with humor because, you know, there's so much more work that needs to be done, but
you know, even distracting kind of sucks too.
Like
taking a break with humor for like an hour and a half.
Sure, like you know, like in the show will continue. Obviously, like we're gonna continue to put out episodes, but yeah, last week was just like read a fucking room. We couldn't put out an episode in good conscience.
No, hell no. Yeah. So. Watch LA 92 on Netflix.
Yes,
that's a good.
Also, watch 13th on Netflix.
Oh. I haven't seen that one yet.
It's a documentary. It's really good. It's all about, like...
I was assuming it would be a documentary to recommend in this situation. You're like, no, it is an anime. It is great.
No. It'll
distract you completely from what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, watch that. Highly recommend that. It was also a book. But yeah, there's... I mean, obviously, you know, white people, fucking do your due diligence. Read a book. Please. Hey. I implore you.
So I know. I've seen a lot of them share. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of them mad also, but I've seen a good amount countering with sharing.
It is more than sharing, yes. It is also doing the work, which is why I'm just like, ah!
Yeah, see, there you go.
But I spent a good chunk of today sharing some black-owned businesses in Orange County and Los Angeles, so if you, you know, you're obviously it's not available now, but like, you know, if you did see it, you know, go buy a coffee that's, you know, run by black people.
Yeah, and also if you're, you know, you're probably pretty cool, you're already listening to this podcast, you probably have seen it from someone else that you're cool with.
Yeah, you know, and also if you've listened to our podcast for any length of time, like...
We're not apolitical, we're not.
You're familiar with our politics in general.
In just the last episode before this, we talked about Jerry Falwell.
And Anthony was... incensed with rage.
Yeah, and I use it as another excuse to say fuck Ronald Reagan. See? It's okay. We're gonna keep watching. Let's start a Get Out episode.
We did a whole month. We did like Black History Month.
Yeah, that's right.
We did all black horror films, which isn't to say like we're good, but like
no, I mean, but you should watch Tales from the Hood. It's amazing.
But we, you know, we'll take it, you know, we'll use it as an opportunity to use our platform to be like, hey, acknowledge this.
Yeah.
It's fucked up.
Why are there not more accolades? God damn it.
Yeah. So, but I mean, there's always more work to be done. And this is very, everything's fucked. And I'm angry. Anthony's angry. We're all angry.
But. To be fair, Alex, we're recording early, so we could be even more angry next week.
Who knows what next week's going to hold? It's going to hold my 25th birthday.
Yeah.
My quarter life crisis is upon us.
Among
America's crises.
I wonder if it's like a quarter life thing for the U.S. Or maybe it's like, you know.
I think America's older than 25.
No, but you know, in our overall existence. We might be at the quarter mark.
I don't know.
Or we could be at like the 90% mark.
We could just go up in flames. And frankly, at this point, wouldn't be opposed to it.
God damn. All right. Yeah, no, we're getting too hot, but we know the for something with plenty of white people in it, we have
Buffy. For a TV show that was, at the time, was praised for its inclusivity. What the fuck?
Yeah.
We have our quintessential example of the black sidekick character. Just the perfect example in one of the episodes that we're covering today. We're covering Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We're covering two episodes, kicking off with season 2, episode 18, Killed by Death, which came out in 1998.
Oh, boy.
And season 4, episode 10, probably the most famous episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, 1999. Also, very quick before we get started, welcome to the Horrible People's Podcast. Oh, didn't introduce it. I'm so sorry.
You came in hot, dude. We just came in too hot.
Talking about my birthday and then political unrest and just how much we hate everything that's going on. But welcome to the show. Thank you for tuning in. We know everything's really scary and everything's really, and if you're probably angry and frustrated at everything that's going on, but thank you for going on this, you know, probably 90-minute adventure with us. So
yeah, we appreciate it.
Let's go ahead and get started. I'm personally very excited to talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, but Buffy the Vampire Slayer was very, very important to me growing up.
Did you watch it in syndication, I would imagine? Yeah, you did, obviously. You were like four.
Yeah, I mean, in 1998, I was...
Two?
Three.
Damn.
So...
Yeah, okay. I remember airing, like, live.
I mean, I've seen a couple episodes, like, on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I was so young at the time, I don't know if it was, like, an actual, like, airing, like, a first-time airing.
Yeah.
But when I was in high school, my mom and my mom's coworker was obsessed. My mom, she was obsessed with the show. And the coworker's, like, she's still, like, a family friend to this day. Like, I love her. But she got my mom and subsequently me into Buffy the Vampire Slayer when I was in, like, middle school.
Which is, like,
the perfect age to get into Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So she started, she lent me the first season, and I was fucking hooked. And then,
with their deprived of horror, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So and this was, like, basically appropriate horror, right?
Yeah.
So, every subsequent birthday and Christmas after, I would get like a season or two of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Hey!
And now I have all of them.
You had to wait a year for it, but hell yeah, that's like...
Well, it was fine because I'd get them in like two season chunks.
Mm-hmm.
And I this was before binging was really a thing.
Yeah, so that's what makes it cool though.
So I wouldn't watch... So I would watch like them in like a couple episodes at a time, but within... you know, because my birthday and Christmas are, like, perfectly 6 months apart.
Yeah.
I would go through two seasons every 6 months.
That's awesome.
So, I'd just keep on getting new ones. So,
Oh, there's a stretch of years there that are, like, Buffy time.
Damn. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, we're talking, like... And then there was a point where I think I just got the rest of them all at once, where it was just, like, I was just, like...
More content. You know what? Here, take it.
Well, yeah, because they were just like, you're clearly obsessed with this, and you're definitely going to watch all of them, so we're not just going to give you them in little increments, hoping, like, if you fall off, it's not the end of the world. So they're like, here's the investment version.
Wow. See, I remember I would always see the promos for it after watching, like, the Wayans Brothers and, like, other stuff, and then I'd watch it every once in a while. But that I would always be able to follow the story based on the previews. Because you're like, next week on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I'm like, oh shit, that happened. Okay.
Or like previously. Like, they're very good at summarizing what happened on the previous.
But even the promos were full of spoilers. Like, they did not give a fuck. They're just like, is she going to make this decision? You're like, well, I guess I'll find out next week.
I guess I'll find out if so-and-so actually dies.
I remember, like, because I watched three episodes for this. Gingerbread. Gingerbread was the one I watched in between. And I thought it was pretty cool to watch an episode per season because I was like, oh, right, change between seasons and now Spike's a character and then, like, all this shit. And it was interesting. It kind of brought me back a little bit.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
So I watched, I watched from, you're going to laugh at me, I watched from season 2, episode 18 to season 4, episode 10.
Jeez.
Like, I just
you did that. You just did it.
I sat here on my nice new TV.
Yeah.
And watched the whole thing.
That's how I watched The Simpsons. So I get it.
But The Simpsons is not 45 minutes long per episode.
No, that's true. But each episode's like, or each season is like a lot of episodes.
That's also true.
A lot of episodes.
Yeah. All right, respect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so let's go ahead and get started. We're going to go over a brief, we're going to go over like Buffy the Vampire Slayer as a whole, and then we're going to go into the episodes proper for this. But the episode that we're, the second episode I think we covered was Hush, or the second episode, I think I mentioned it, but it's Hush. It's the most famous episode probably, and it's from 1999.
Sweet.
So,
and
I was four.
4 years old, Jesus. I was older than four. I was a very confused child, okay?
So, let's go into the general IMDb synopsis for the entire series. A young woman destined to slay vampires, demons, and other infernal creatures deals with her life fighting evil with the help of her friends.
I read that as infertile.
Infertile. No.
We can't reproduce. Just take them out now.
Just end their shit. It was created by Joss Whedon. And Joss Whedon was an executive producer along with David Greenwald and Marty Noxon.
Oh, Marty Noxon's a cool name.
Yeah.
I dig that. Okay.
And so for Killed by Death, that episode was written by Rob De. I don't know if that's French or not.
Yeah, that's a weird one.
If it's French, it's Des Hôtels. Or Des Hôtels.
Or Des Hôtels.
If you want to. Or Dean Batali. And it was directed by Darren Serafian.
Okay.
Serafian. And its original air date was March 3rd, 1998. And then Hush was written and directed by Joss Whedon. And its original air date was December 14th, 1999.
I gotta say, Hush is like a very polished episode. When I saw it, I'm like, damn.
Yeah.
This is like some contemporary shit.
Yeah, there was, yeah, we'll get into it. And the cast for the both episodes was Sarah Michelle Gellar, of course, the beautiful...
Oh, yeah. Goddess?
Goddess. Mm-hmm. Sarah Michelle Gellar as Buffy Summers. Nicholas Brendon as Xander Harris. Allison Hannigan, my favorite, as Willow Rosenberg.
She's the best.
Charisma Carpenter as Cordelia Chase. And Anthony Stewart Head as Rupert Giles. And, of course, James Marsters as Spike.
It's funny. I never liked Spike, I remember, when I was younger. I think it just his look. Just
So, I think, I don't know if this is true, but kids didn't like Spike.
I can see that.
Parents liked Spike.
That makes sense.
My mom loves Spike.
You know who I didn't like either? Because it was Angel. I fucking hated Angel.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Well, he had a show also.
He did.
And I would see the promotions for that show. To me, it looked so lame compared to Buffy.
Really? Okay, so here's the thing about Angel. I wasn't allowed to watch Angel because Angel was too dark. Angel was too scary. Mm-hmm. Buffy was fine.
See? Oh, that's interesting.
And even weirder. Well, not weirder, but for when I did my initial rewatch of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, because I had the guidance of this family friend who I love dearly. Mm-hmm. She would give us episodes that I could not watch.
Oh, interesting.
Because there was like I think two episodes where it was just like there was like adult content that was like she was just like, I don't know if like a middle school high schooler should be watching this. I
have to contextualize this shit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It was just really intense, and I understand why they didn't want me to watch it now. But I'm so overdue for like an entire rewatch. But
nice,
I love the show.
You can finally go through with it.
Same thing with Firefly.
Really?
I did not watch I fucking love Firefly. Mm-hmm. Also, problem with a serious diversity issue with Firefly.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It's
the 90s and 2000s, early 2000s.
I would say it's probably more of a Joss Whedon problem.
Yeah, that makes sense, too.
But the point is, going back to it, that's enough. That's a whole other conversation. Not for this. Anyway, I didn't watch the entire series, which is harsh considering that there's one fucking season, mm-hmm. Until I was like 20.
Really?
Yeah, because it was just like same. Like I had this thing in my head where I'm like, I can't watch these episodes. But because I watched the season so much when I was younger, mm-hmm. I had to purposely skipped those episodes so often.
It became instinct, huh?
Because I watched it so much, I just skipped it. Then I was like, why haven't I seen this episode? And then I watched it, and I was like, titties.
Interesting. Yeah. Man, you had such different upbringings. Okay.
I know. White people.
Ah. Parental guidance was just like, okay, they're not fighting each other for right now. Let them just be in front of the TV. It's fine.
But anyway,
let's learn a little bit about Buffy, huh? Yay. Let's do it. That's well, we went a while to get to this one. Okay, so writer Joss Whedon says that Rhonda the Immortal Waitress was really the incarnation of the Buffy concept. Quote, the idea of some woman who seems to be completely insignificant who turns out to be extraordinary, end quote. Interesting. So this early, unproduced idea evolved into Buffy, which Whedon developed to invert the Hollywood formula of little blonde girl who goes into a dark alley and gets killed in every horror movie.
This is done so well. In the first season.
They picked the littlest, blondest girl they could. And she is just murking motherfuckers.
Well, one of the things, and we'll get into this a little bit later in like the legacy of Buffy, but one of the things that people, especially on Twitter, have grown to appreciate, that she's very feminine.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and she's still very, very kick-ass.
Yes.
In a very cool juxtaposition that happens when you get the introduction of like Faith, who's a little bit more like, you know, kick-ass and, like, masculine. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, she definitely is. Like, you could see
she's
it.
A girly
she's a girly girl.
Girl.
Yeah,
she
exactly.
She was, like, a cheerleader, you know? Mm-hmm. And then she's also just like, I broke a nail. While she, like, just, like, killed a fucking vampire. That's just, like, it's just fun.
But Whedon wanted to, quote, to subvert that idea and create someone who was a hero, end quote. Which, yeah, clearly. But the idea was first visited through Whedon's script for the 1992 movie, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, which featured Christy Swanson in the title role. I always saw that cover, like, at the Blockbuster or whatever. I fucking hated it. I'm like, that's not...
Have you ever seen it?
No.
It's not good.
I would bet.
It's
I just,
not.
Like, Sarah like, Michelle Gellar was in my brain.
Watching it after Buffy the... Or watching it after starting the series, I was just like, what? No.
Yeah.
This is no good.
Mm-mm. I mean, and then also grew up in an era where Sarah Michelle Gellar was the shit.
Yeah.
She was like star, whatever, fucking Chrissy Swanson. Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't... this past my time.
And also, like, in the movie, she ends up with Xander, I think.
Does she?
I think so. I remember correctly.
It's a movie. They condense, like, all that bullshit. And they're like, here's three acts. There you go. That's the story for you.
Yeah, but I just... And then as I'm watching it, I'm like, no, this is all wrong.
Oh, that's hilarious. But the director, what's his name? Fran Rubel Kuzui?
I guess so.
Kuzui. Sorry, buddy. Saw it as a, quote, pop culture comedy about the people, about what people think about vampires. Ooh. Kuzui, you suck. Anyways, Whedon disagreed entirely on this concept, saying, quote, I had written this scary film about an empowered woman, and they turned it into a broad comedy. It was crushing, end quote. Yeah, I can see that being...
Yeah.
Clearly what he did with the show, and he's like, this is how you fucking do it.
he was just like, you guys did it wrong. This is what, like, let me show you how it's
Yeah, look
really
how much money
done.
You could have made, fuckers.
Yeah.
But consequently, the script was praised within the industry, but the movie was not.
Shocker.
Yeah. Several years later, Gail Berman, who owned the TV rights to the movie, approached Whedon to develop his Buffy concept into a television series. Whedon explained that, quote, they said... Do you want to do a show? And I thought, high school as a horror movie. And so the metaphor became the central concept behind Buffy, and that's how I sold it, end quote. All right, Whedon. Dude, he's kind of a baller, though. Like
he at the time, I will give, like, the reason why I think, like, you know what, I'll get into it later.
Continue. Just do it. Save it. I want to hear more about this. Give people something to look forward to. Just take a swig of that beer. Go for it. But the supernatural elements in the series stood as metaphors for personal anxieties associated with adolescence and young adulthood.
Done very well.
Yeah, I think I remember that. Some of it felt pretty real as a younger person back then, too.
It covers, like, some of the stuff that I was watching, like some of the episodes I was watching, like in between, I was like, this is really real for like high school. Like it was covering like date rape. It was like, but in like, not in like a Saved by the Bell kind of way.
Yeah.
It was more like in a, like she, like Buffy's like the one on the outside, just like, what the fuck are you guys even doing?
it's did it with a Whedon kind of like flair to it. So, which is, you know, it was good. Yeah, and then I remember also around this time that one show, Undeclared, and all this other stuff was on, so I'm like, I'm learning a lot of lessons through TV right now. Like,
yeah, this, yeah, there was a lot going on where there were
Freaks and
like,
Geeks, too. Yeah, good old Apatow teaching us shit. Jesus, what happened?
Charmed was also big.
Oh my god, Charmed. That fucking opening song.
Okay, so here's the deal. You were either a fan of Charmed, or you, like, you were either a Charmed diehard, or you were a Buffy diehard.
Yeah, I was Team Buffy, dude.
Yeah.
Nah, Charmed, I would like, see it on TV, I'm like, this is, no.
Well, that's the thing, is like, there's like, because I never really got into Charmed, but I really obviously got into Buffy.
See, the thing is, from the time, the way they would promote each show, Charmed always seemed lame to me. Like, it would, like, the music
Charmed was more of, like a drama, like a CW, like,
yeah, that's why it was fucking, it was melodramatic. Like, they pitched it that way, and Buffy was, like, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, Buffy was, like, if you're a nerd, it kind of hit that nerve, that, right there.
Buffy had, like, pop culture references shoved in every single episode.
I think it showed, yeah.
Like, literally watching it, I'm like, what's with these references, guys? It dates the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it doesn't always work in its favor. Like,
I think with enough time, though, it kind of has its own appeal, though.
It does. It absolutely gives it, like, a nostalgic flair to it, especially when they're making jokes about, like, floppy disks. Mm-hmm.
How many kilobytes is this? Oh, my God, that's impossible.
Yeah. And it didn't make it into this episode because everyone knows it, but it's a very fun fact. And in case you didn't, I'm going to tell you now. Buffy was the very first instance of the use of the word to Google something.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
So they say like, oh, let's Google that. Like that was like the, or whatever. The
ahead of their fucking time right there. Jeez.
They're the first instance ever. And then after that, it just kind of took off.
Right. Nice. But see, you know what? Going back to the little promos and marketing at the time, I think why I thought Angel was lame because it was kind of marketed the same way Charmed was.
Oh, I'm sure.
It was so melodramatic. Angel was so moody. And yep, and all this angst and blah blah, and I was just like, nah, dude, give me the sass.
But that's why I was, okay, but that's cool. That's funny because Charisma Carpenter, Cordelia Chase, was like, the starring was like second, like also on the show.
Mm.
She left Buffy and
to
went
go
to
be
Angel.
On that show. Mm-hmm. Interesting. But Whedon went on, of course, to write and partially fund, hey, bold, a 25-minute non-broadcast pilot to show networks to sell this show before eventually selling it to the WB Network, which had the Frog back in the day.
Yes.
Yes.
This is all just a throwback.
It's really hitting home. Again, Sister, Sister, and Wayne's Brothers were my shit, and they were on the WB, and that was after Batman Superman Adventures. So it just kept, they kept throwing that stuff at me. Yep, sorry. It's going over your head. I get it. You were not conscious of that. No. Yeah.
No.
And then the Simpsons were afterwards. But yeah. So 90s were a different time. Joss Whedon was credited as executive producer throughout the run of the series. And for the first five seasons, 1997 to 2001, he was also the showrunner, supervising the writing and all aspects of the production.
That sounds exhausting.
That does sound exhausting, like big time.
It also sounds like he was a little bit of like a control freak.
I would say he's pretty protective of the property, it seems like, yeah. He's like, you don't know, mm-mm.
Yeah.
I don't want any of those fucking ideas. But he did like Marty Nixon's ideas. Nixon. Marty Nixon took on the role for season 6 and 7, 2001 to 2003. But Whedon continued to be involved with writing and directing Buffy alongside projects such as Angel, Frey, and Firefly.
Of course.
Which got a very big cult following. Although she was not credited by name, one of the executive producers of Buffy the Vampire Slayer was Dolly fucking Parton. Damn. We went over this before. It really surprised the shit of us. But she funded the show anonymously.
Yeah.
So she saw the appeal right there.
Which is so fucking cool. Like, every single time something pops up about Dolly Parton, I'm just like, What a gem of a human.
Yeah, she's fucking great. But during the first year of the series, Whedon described the show as, quote, my so-called life with the X-Files, end quote. That's it. Okay. My so-called life gave a sympathetic portrayal of teen anxieties. In contrast, the X-Files delivered a supernatural monster of the week storyline, which...
Love that shit.
Yeah, this was a pretty prominent genre back in the day.
Yes. So, and you also see this in later TV shows trying to, like, re-emulate this. My favorite example of this is Smallville.
That's right, huh?
The only thing that Smallville did that, like, kind of shot itself in the foot is it... Because Buffy evolved to eventually be more narrative-based.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, in... it would have like Monster of the Week kind of themes to it sometimes.
But it,
like,
had big arcs.
Yes. But by the time it got to like later seasons, it was so much more arc driven versus Smallville, which by the time you're getting into seasons like 6, you're still getting like Monster of the Week episodes.
Yeah, they had to slowly get to Superman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's not Monster of the Week, it's more like Crater Freaks, which is kind of the thing with Smallville.
Yeah, similar stuff.
I love Smallville. Don't get me wrong, I really, really enjoyed Smallville. And so good. But I just, early 2000s, like late 90s, early 2000s, like TV shows, like they don't make them like that
they
anymore.
Don't.
Like,
they really don't.
It's just so good.
No, even the CW drama didn't feel like that bad.
Like, even, like, and I'm totally making, like, even like the Vampire Diaries is like the closest I would say for like this generation.
Recent,
of
yeah.
Like, close enough. And even then, I'm just like, this is bad.
Well, I noticed that the Vampire Diaries is, because it's not my thing, but I know a lot of people are like, even friends I know are like, dude, you gotta watch it. I'm like, what?
What do you mean?
So obviously it still has some broader appeal.
It has some broader appeal.
Yeah.
And also, Kevin Williamson, I believe.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
Kevin Williamson.
Yeah, Kevin Williamson was involved in it. Which
good old relic of the 90s right there. Yeah, nice.
So that's why it still kind of has the essence.
It does. It absolutely has the essence. Back on this, Buffy struggles, of course, throughout the series with her calling as Slayer and the loss of freedom this entails, frequently sacrificing teenage experiences for her Slayer duties.
So good.
Yeah, she's definitely a hero. Hero, for
yeah.
sure. But her difficulties and eventual empowering realizations are reflections of several dichotomies faced by modern women and echo feminist issues within society. Whedon was praised for the feminist tone of the show, but since it was made in the late 90s, anything past, quote, women are people, was views it groundbreaking. It
yeah.
was groundbreaking stuff. It's, holy shit, they got personalities?
Their own ambitions. And I think that's where, like, that whole Slayer, like that whole idea of her being a Slayer and, like, her duties as a Slayer was used really well to kind of show that, like, where it's just, like, this idea of feeling like you have to be something versus, like, what you want in life.
It's like the Spider-Man template, but, like, in its own cool kind of thing.
Yeah. Yes, you are what you choose to be. Thank
yeah.
you.
Well, no, because the whole great power, great responsibilities.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But, like, in its own way, which is nice.
Yes, in a much... Yes. Because there have... Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'll allow it.
You're like, I get it. But in 1996, Katie Holmes and Selma Blair were in the running for the role of Buffy Summers. Actresses who originally auditioned for Buffy Summers and got other roles include Julie Benz, Darla.
Awesome character.
Charisma Carpenter, Cordelia Chase. And Mercedes McNabb as Harmony Kendall.
All very fun characters.
Interesting. The title role went to, of course, fucking Bay, Sarah Michelle Gellar, who appeared on Swan's Crossing and All My Children, which we're pulling a lot of our stars in these episodes for All My Children, Jesus. At the age of 18 in 1995, Gellar had already won a Daytime Emmy Award for Outstanding Younger Leading Actress in a Drama Series. So that's an accolade right there.
Yeah.
Shit. In 1996, she originally auditioned for the role of Cordelia Chase. After watching her audition, Joss Whedon asked her to come back in and audition for the lead role of Buffy Summers. She just looks the fucking part.
Like, I mean, we say this now, like, you know, like 17 years after.
Yeah.
But yeah, she definitely was like, I mean, she was Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
The character of Angel was only supposed to appear briefly in the pilot episode. Nathan, how do you
Fillion.
Say it? Fillion, that's right. I always say it Fillion for some reason.
Fillion!
Nathan Fillion was one of the actors who originally auditioned for the role back in early 1996 for the unaired pilot, which did not end up featuring Angel. When the pilot was due to be reshot in September 1996, scouting for Angel began again. And by chance, a talent agent spotted David Boreanaz. Boreanaz?
Yeah, I think so.
David, blah, 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 blah. On the sidewalk, walking his dog, he immediately contacted casting director Marsha Shulman, saying that he had found Angel. That is psychotic.
Isn't that crazy?
That is just like, he's just like, do I need to go to the gas station today? I can really use some gum. Okay. I might as well take the dog.
Or basically, yeah. I mean, yeah.
It's like, oh, the poor dog. Like, if the dog's shit didn't, his leash didn't get cut, was resisting that 5 minutes, he would have just missed the producer.
That's a weird alternative reality.
Right? I guess we'll take the Fillion guy.
That would have been weird, too.
Yeah.
That would have, oh, my God.
Fillion would later portray...
What? Fillion.
Fillion.
Fillion. You called him Fillion.
That's how I say it in my head. Fillion would later portray Caleb in the 7th season and would also work with Whedon on a few other projects, including the doomed but classic Firefly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, David Boreanaz... would also go on to star in Bones. So
you just network TV guy right there, dude.
No, yeah, he's like, yeah, I was obsessed with him when I was younger. I had the biggest crush on this guy. Like, I was just like, wow.
Between him and the guy from My Bloody Valentine 3D, what was that guy?
Oh, Jensen Ackles.
Jensen Ackles, your two boys.
There were lots of boys. I'm not.
But
gonna...
Jensen Ackles was bad.
No, Jensen Ackles wasn't bad. He was just like, he just had a deep voice and a lot of angst. But so did he. So maybe I just have a type.
There you go.
God, he had so much angst. Oh my God. Like watching it now, like watching their characters interact, I was like, what was I thinking? What? I just want to go back in time and just smack 13-year-old me upside the head and be like, stop it.
And you're like, no, that's my husband.
Yeah, right?
Nicholas Brendon, unlike other Buffy regulars, had little acting experience, instead working various jobs, including production assistant, plumber's assistant, oh, two different PAs right there, veterinary janitor, food delivery, script delivery, daycare counselor, and waiter before breaking into acting and overcoming his stutter.
So an actor.
Yeah, okay. He had a lot to pull from.
Temp work.
There, right?
So an actor.
Waiter, yeah.
So an actor.
He landed the role of Xander Harris following only 4 days of auditioning. Ryan Reynolds also auditioned for the part, ended up becoming a huge fan of the show, but ultimately didn't want to be known as for playing a high schooler.
Yes. Nicholas Brendon also went on to have a reoccurring role on Criminal Minds.
Oh, my other network guy. Yay. Oh, second bay, Allison Hannigan, was the last of the original six to be cast, following her role in My Stepmother is an Alien. She appeared in commercials and supporting roles on television throughout the early 90s. She did have a very familiar face.
Like, oh, yeah.
She was pretty present, that's for sure. In 1996, the role of Willow Rosenberg was originally played by Riff Reagan.
I have no idea who that is.
Whatever. For the unaired Buffy pilot, but Hannigan auditioned when the role was being recast for the series proper. And you can't not have her in that role. She's that.
Like, well, it's funny because there's people who know her from How I Met Your Mother.
Yes.
Like, they only know her from How I Met Your Mother. And that makes me like, I'm like, it's Willow. It's Willow Rosenberg.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah. So, Nicholas Brendon, I met him at Comic-Con.
Really?
Yeah, I saw him at Comic-Con and like I wasn't dirt poor. I was in high school, so I had no money.
Yeah.
So I couldn't get an autograph, but he was like, I can give you a hug. And I was like, yay! And he gave me a hug and it was great.
Aw, that's funny. Still a capitalist, but you know.
Well, I wasn't, I mean, you know, It wasn't like there was a lot of money, but I was literally in high school.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had no money. I was just there.
You're like, I'm there. I get a meal out of this. Like, that's about it.
Yeah. Well, even then, I'm like, I brought a sandwich and a baggie, and that's all I'm going to eat today. So thanks for nothing.
Oh, my gosh.
But Willow Rosenberg, if you know me as a person, no, she means a lot to me, mm-hmm. just as a person.
I always remember her from American Pie.
That's very funny.
Yeah, she was Jim's girlfriend, so yes.
I've never seen American Pie.
I grew up on American Pie.
You know what? I know a lot of people who did, and I know mm-hmm. a lot of people who are just like, wasn't she the girl from American Pie? And I was just like...
Band girl, yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She, but I mean, also, like, that was like her cinema breakthrough right
yeah.
there. Like, she was part of...
She's this one time at band camp, right?
Yep, that's yeah. her. That's her.
I just know that quote, because mm-hmm. everyone knows that quote.
I mean, it was like a pop culture...
thing yep. for a while. I remember that. Ugh. I just had never seen the movie, because guess what was deeply inappropriate? My mom hated anything that was considered deeply inappropriate.
No, this was deeply inappropriate.
I know.
This was like way...
Why did you see it?
Have we not gone over my upbringing where my parents didn't care and just let me watch things all the time? But no, I remember like, yeah, like even now I'm sure it does not age well.
Oh, I'm sure.
Like, no,
I'm sure it's
like,
problematic a little bit.
It's probably super problematic. Like now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, Jesus, what the hell were the 90s?
What the hell were the 90s?
Oh my
what
god.
The hell
you know what's another one? Dude, Where's My Car? Did you ever hear of that?
I love Dude, Where's My Car?
Have you tried watching it recently, though? You want to talk about problematic?
I watched it with Texas Dad, uh-huh. and our running joke is like, and then?
Oh, yeah.
And then? And then?
Every once in a while, me and my friends will break out and be like, Sultan! And everyone else would just do it. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, no.
But, like, the amount, oh my, like, no, you know what you gotta do? Podcast recommendation, listen to the We Hate Movies episode on Dude, Where's My Car?
I didn't know they did an episode on Dude, Where's My Car.
It's one of the older ones.
Oh, is it funny? I'm sure
it's one of my favorite episodes they've done.
Okay, you know what my favorite episode of theirs is.
Which one was it?
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, that's fucking right, which is on Hulu.
Yeah, okay. So when we were watching, I watched, what did I watch? I watched Moulin Rouge, and the recommendations after was League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
They were released in a similar time frame, that's about it.
And I texted it to Anthony, and I was like, look at what's on Hulu. And he's like, are you going to watch it? And I was like, no, but it's on Hulu. Oh my gosh. Listen to We Hate Movies episode on League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's fucking hilarious.
And Dude, Where's My Car? Just to see how problematic it actually is.
I can't recommend it because I haven't listened to it yet, but I'm going to the
right
second you
after
leave.
Yeah, definitely. And also, you know, more of our episodes, clearly.
Oh my
but,
god, that's
geez.
So funny. I haven't watched Dude, Where's My Car in forever.
I'm telling you.
Is it really problematic?
Yeah,
is it
yeah,
bad? Oh no.
Yeah.
Oh no.
Yeah. I didn't think so that much, but then like I heard them talk about it and then it was on TV and I was like, ooh. That verified. Okay.
Confirmed.
But the Zoltan stuff's still funny.
I mean, also
it's still funny, okay?
I'll still talk to my dad, so I'll call him sometimes and I'll be like, dude,
sweet, yeah.
Dude, that's my sweet.
Oh.
So there's moments that are still quotable.
No, definitely.
Oh, that's funny as fuck.
But let's get to these episodes.
So let's tackle Killed by Death. We're going to just talk, like, there's not a lot on the production of Killed by Death. Hush has a little bit more of a robust production. So we're just going to talk a little bit about that and then go into the plot, because it's actually a pretty fun plot.
Yeah, all these episodes have great, like, again, Monster of the Week kind of deal going on.
It's like they're all little movies.
Mm-hmm. They
you
are.
Know, which is nice. So, the script was originally planned for the first season, and it was before Angel became evil, so this takes place in season two, later in the season.
Mm-hmm.
So, for those of you who don't know, season two, it's basically split into two parts. The first half is basically Buffy and Angel being in a relationship,
mm-hmm.
and them basically being like a will-they-won't-they type situation. Spoilers, I guess, for
yeah.
a 17-year-old TV show.
It's about the journey, okay?
Right. They have sex on Buffy's birthday, and because Angel has a moment of true happiness, he loses his soul because he's a vampire with a soul. And because of that, he loses his soul and becomes an evil vampire again. Because in the Buffy lore, all vampires don't have souls. So he becomes evil again, and they're all trying to battle Angel. So this was supposed to take place before Angel turned bad.
Mm-hmm.
It evolved eventually into the episode we see in season 2.
Yeah.
So that's what you missed.
It has been widely assumed that...
Der Kindenstud, which is the monster.
Interesting. May have been inspired by Freddy Krueger. However, Joss Whedon says that this character was based on this thing that creeped him out as a kid, as with many of course the monsters on the show.
He based a lot of things based on things that creeped him out as a kid. I don't know how much of that is like real or not, but. Mm-hmm.
I mean, with his imagination, I imagine he's, yeah.
This is one of only 3 episodes of the entire series where Buffy is hospitalized.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. Because I never remembered her being hospitalized. And I
in
was
the
always
entire
like,
series.
Yeah, she was always like boss.
Well, yeah, because like as a Slayer, you heal faster and all that stuff. So basically, we'll get into why she's in the hospital right now.
Yep, because plot time, ladies and gentlemen. Let's get into it. So weak with the flu, Buffy collapses after a fight with Angel. Angelus.
So basically there's Angel, which is good Angel.
Yeah.
And then Angelus is bad Angel.
Interesting. All right, with Angelus. But she is admitted to the hospital, which much against her will, actually. And her mother reveals that Buffy has hated hospitals ever since she saw her beloved cousin, Celia, die in one when she was 8 years old. And I think having not seen Buffy in, like, decades... This was a pretty cool opening because I kind of got re-caught up in my head.
Yeah.
Like, in my mind, I was like, that's right. Everything's there. Buffy is a badass, only hindered a little bit by this little thing that's out of her control, and she still wants to keep doing it because she's the goddamn Slayer.
Yes.
That's the lesson I learned within 5 minutes.
When I watched that, I was like, oh, this is good. I picked well.
Yeah.
Good timing.
And then I had forgotten that Angel turned evil. Because mm-hmm. I remember him being a big focus in the early promos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, because, you know, Angel's, like, a pretty big character in season 1, and then, it's like, there's, like, this tension and whatever, mm-hmm. but then season 2, they're, like, actually in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Buffy is, like, at this point, oh, God, season 2, she is a junior in high school.
That's crazy. And she's in college in Hush, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes.
I like the different setting. It was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's a junior in high school.
Jeez.
High school.
Okay.
So, and so, again, as an adult, looking back, I saw nothing wrong with this relationship when I was...
Wait, how old's Angel?
He's like a 150-year-old vampire.
Oh, jeez.
Like, this is a true Twilight-esque situation, my friend.
It's like, yeah, this is Jesus.
Yeah. He's a very old vampire.
And maturity-wise, he is...
He's just completely fucked.
Yeah.
But no, the whole time, like... There's, like, I would do, like, little quizzes and stuff, and people would be like, oh, like, Buffy, like, do you want Buffy to be with Spike or Angel? And now I'm just like, neither. She was in high school, you fucking weirdos. And, yeah, so.
Maybe vampire high school's, like, after a century. I don't know.
Well, also, I was having this conversation with Caitlin. Hi, Caitlin. About this, and like we were just like, why high school? Like literally, it could like just like
because it was on the WB.
It's true.
It was on the W. That we were the demographic.
It's true, but also like I mean, you see this with Twilight, Vampire Diaries, like everything.
Because Twilight feels like something that should have been on the WB.
Yeah,
that's
but
why.
Like, Vampire Diaries also, but like it's just like why high school? Why not just like wait? Like literally, like through like why? Why?
Vampires.
Hi.
Vampires.
Anyway, moving on. Past my moral dilemma here. So, that night, in what might be a dream, Buffy sees a young boy named Ryan being followed by a strange-looking creature. Creepy as shit.
Yes, super creepy.
She then starts having flashbacks of Celia's time in the hospital.
Yeah, this is a good expository episode, now that I think about it.
Also, this, like, seeing this,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure I watched it the first time when I was sick, and it scared the shit out of me.
Oh, yeah, that's nightmare fuel right there. The creature right there, like, the dude, whatever his fucking thing is, we'll get to it. But Buffy awakes, and takes a walk down the hall where she witnesses two men remove a dead child. Score another one for child death.
I was going to say child death.
Yep. Season of child death from the children's ward. At the door, she overhears an argument between two doctors about one's experimental treatment. I cannot believe how little child death we had in our first season.
And now we're just
like... It's like the majority of the second season.
Whoops.
Our beds. But this is a good misdirection.
Yes.
Like, really good.
Yeah, this is good. She meets Ryan, who tells her that death comes at night.
That's a little boy, right? Yeah, that's an ominous creepy
child.
Yeah, seriously.
Love a good creepy child.
But the next morning, Buffy tells her friends about the overheard conversation. Since she is forced to stay at the hospital, she plans to find out what the doctor is up to, and Xander volunteers everyone's help. I didn't realize he was so obsessed with Buffy in this early part.
He's obsessed with Buffy, I want to say, until he starts dating Anya.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn, how long is that into the...
They start dating, I want to say...
Pre-college?
Around, yeah, I want to say season 3.
Interesting.
Season 3-ish.
It's just weird. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that throws me off a little bit. And again, I hadn't seen the show in decades, but I remembered, like, I don't know about that.
Well, because he's, like, literally, Oh my gosh, there was another episode that we were initially going to cover called Nightmares. And I watched that first before I was like, this is fun, but it's not. But this is, that was in season 1.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when Xander is straight up like obsessed with her.
Mr.
Like,
Friendzone over there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, and he comes around eventually, but like early season Xander is probably one of my least favorite TV characters of all time.
Yeah, I can see that.
Like,
he's a little needy.
He's a little fucking incel. Like,
yeah, he is. A lot of 90s characters were incel as fuck, though.
That's true.
Like, a lot of protagonists.
It's true. Like, he is, like, a good character. Like, and I mean that, like, in, like, he is well-written, and he has, like, it is clear where his intentions are.
He's got an arc, yeah.
Yeah, but he comes around in the later seasons,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. But, yeah, he always, like, is kind of in love with Buffy. But
really played up early on.
Even in this episode, yeah. When, like, Cordelia, who is, like, his girlfriend at the time, is just like, you are clearly still into Buffy.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, so, anyway. Let's see here. So, Cordelia and Xander sneak into the hospital's record room and search for records on the girl who died that night. Meanwhile, Giles and Willow search for information in the school library. Basically, the necessary school library research scene.
The good old Hermione Granger tactic right there. But in the morning, Buffy informs everyone that the doctor who was experimenting on the kids is not the suspect and shows them Ryan's drawing of the creature. At the library, Cordelia finds a picture of Ryan's monster on the cover of a book. They learn that it is called
Kindestod.
In German, the child's death.
Or child death or something.
A demon that absorbs the life force of sickly children, making it seem like they died of their illness.
Way to go.
Yeah, the good old folklore having a fucking
fight. Yeah, it's a fairy tale. So they report this to Buffy via telephone, and she realizes that the doctor, and the reason why that this doctor, who is no longer a suspect, is because he was murdered viciously. Very Freddy Krueger-esque.
Yeah, definitely Krueger-esque. Absolutely.
This doctor, he was murdered because he was curing the children and depriving the monster of his food source. Buffy also realizes, to her horror, that this monster is what killed Cilia while Buffy watched helplessly when she was younger.
Oh, that's what I liked about the episode.
Yeah.
Like that, like, little peek into her past.
Yes.
Yeah. Buffy and Willow realize that only sick people can see this demon, so they reinfect Buffy with the flu in the hopes that she'll be able to fight the demon before she gets too sick. And I love the scene where Buffy's like about to down. She's like, oh, okay, that'll kill you.
So, I know, me too. I love that.
I like how Buffy's like sure-headedness, and then Willow's just like, let's take a different approach real quick.
Like, she's just like, it's not diluted. This will kill you immediately.
Yeah.
And she's just like, oh. Yeah, and I think that's just, yeah,
it's a good display of their characteristics.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Where Buffy is just like headstrong, like straight into battle, like mm-hmm. screw the consequences. And Willow's like, let's come up with a plan, shall we?
God, I always loved Willow.
Me too.
She's the best.
Yeah, Willow's the best. Willow, yeah. I love Willow. Anyway, Buffy sees Kindan's dad in the kids' like little wing and watches it as it heads down to the basement. Children also escape there quietly, but Kindenstad finds them and attacks Ryan. It begins to suck his life out in the most terrifying way possible, with its eyes coming out of its head and doing the little tentacle thing. It's terrifying.
In my mind, I was like, oh, it's going to be like a Dementor. And then the eye thing happened. I'm like, that's not at all like a Dementor. That is fucked up.
That is terrifying.
Oh, but of course, Buffy arrives and fights the Kindenstad in a motherfucking like bout. And just as it's about to suck her fucking life out, she snaps its neck in a very Woo. Buffy move.
Yeah, and then they get out of there, and it's just, you know, you have that nice little closure with the mom. So that's it for Killed by Death. Like, it's a pretty short I mean, it's not a short episode, but, I mean, it's not, like, not a lot of overarching...
Yeah, no, it's its own thing.
Yeah, like, it's a monster of the week. Like, you can tell, in my opinion, like, when I read the little factoid that this was initially meant for season one, I'm like, you can tell.
In what sense?
Season two, so I would say with each season, in my opinion, season one is all Monster of the Week.
That makes sense, yeah.
And then season two, there's a little bit more of, like, that narrative, like, overarching storyline. And then... Season 3, 4, so on and so forth, like, it just adds more.
Yeah.
This episode feels like if this had been in season 1, I don't think it would have been out of place.
No, that makes sense. That makes total sense. Besides the Angel fight, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, like, if they had taken out, like, the stuff with Angel, like, I think it would have fit in perfectly.
Yeah, it definitely feels like TV, which is pretty cool. Like,
I also just love season 1.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense.
You get a lot of fun stuff in season one. A couple episodes after this, you also have a very fun, like, Fishman episode.
Oh, interesting.
That also felt very season one, and I appreciated that a lot.
Nice. Early Buffy.
Yeah.
But now we're going to get into some later Buffy. So this one is Hush.
Yay.
Probably the most iconic episode in Buffy history.
For sure.
If you've been in any Reddit comment thread where Buffy comes up, the next comment is Hush.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time.
You've probably seen GIFs of Hush, like, for sure. Very creepy, very iconic. So a little bit of context for season 4 before we get into it.
Yes.
So season 4, this is Buffy's first year at UC Sunnydale.
God. I think it's UC.
Yeah. I also like that Sunnydale's big enough for a UC.
Yeah.
Not only is Sunnydale large enough for a UC, but also the amount of death in Sunnydale hasn't, like, dissuaded. Anyway.
Property values must be great.
It's true. But anyway, so for context, this is Buffy's first year at UC Sunnydale. She lives in the dorms. It's very exciting. But she also has this thing with this boy named Riley Finn, who works secretly for this government installation called the Initiative.
Sounds very CW.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's all why they and it's moonlit as a frat house on UC Sunnydale's campus.
Their little lair reminded me of, like, Resident Evil.
Yeah.
Yeah, it had a little Resident Evil vibes there.
Yeah, it feels very Resident Evil-y. And they take demons and vampires and stuff and implant them with chips so they cannot hurt people and just release them. It's a trap and release type of situation.
Interesting.
That's
okay.
What happened to Spike, and that's why Spike is with them
in
this episode, because Spike, like, physically cannot hurt a person.
Interesting. Okay.
So he doesn't have a soul,
but
he can't, like, he cannot physically cause harm, but he can cause harm to beings, to demons and vampires.
Interesting.
So he kind of is like a little, you know, what's the word? vigilante right now.
Oh, I was thinking like video game terms. He's like a really good like NPC for the RPG part.
No. He's a little vigilante. So basically, he's helping them like fight demons and stuff because mm-hmm. that's the only thing he can literally kick their ass.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
And he just wants violence right now.
Exactly. Yeah, like he's hungering for it.
Yeah, he's just craving violence.
But after reading critical responses to the series in which the dialogue was praised as the most successful aspect of the show, Whedon set out to write an episode almost completely devoid of speech. Only about 17 minutes of dialogue is presented in the entire 44 minutes of Hush.
I like that he just basically wrote this episode out of spite. Oh, you should have said this one, but I'm going to say it anyway. Nosferatu from 1922, Pinhead from Hellraiser 1987, and Mr. Burns from The Simpsons.
Oh my god, yeah.
All served as models for the gentleman. Elegantly Victorian in costume and demeanor, Joss Whedon found their politeness and grace especially unsettling. Their metallic teeth were also inspired by the intersection of Victorian culture with the height of the Industrial Age, an era that Whedon considers as classically creepy.
Now that I look at it, yeah, there's some Burnsism for sure in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With like the little hand clasping and like, yeah, for
and it,
sure.
It gives it like a sense of uncanny valley because it's like pretty on point with like the Burns mannerisms.
Mm-hmm.
But like, ey, realistic. That's creepy. Jesus.
It's what Mr. Burns would look like if Mr. Burns was a real person.
Yeah. Ugh. Fucking hell. And he would steal people's voices too. He would do that. Like, that's a Burns plot right there. It's like, well, I'll take criticism. but Joss Whedon fashioned the gentleman as something from a Brothers Grimm fairy tale, intending them to be frightening to children, monsters who carve out people's hearts, smiling as they do so.
Two of the gentlemen, one of whom you may know, Doug Jones and Camden Toy, were able to sustain the creepy smile while on camera without AIDS.
Damn.
Which is totally believable. I don't know if it makes it on here. If it does, I'm sorry for stealing your thunder or my own future thunder. But all of the gentlemen were classically trained as mimes.
I think you told me about this before. Yeah, that's fucking insane.
Mm-hmm. That's like how they got the part. Because they had to be able to emote without speaking.
Yeah. And of course, Doug Jones is like the guy that can do that.
Oh, yeah. If you need to emote without speaking, you call Doug Jones.
You call Doug Jones. But just like Killed by Death, Whedon got the idea for the monsters from this episode from Nightmares that he had when he was a child.
Two other episodes in the Buffy canon universe are also based on or have elements of fairy tales. Killed by Death, of course, which we just covered, and Gingerbread, where a demon takes on the form of Hansel and Gretel to create a moral panic in Sunnydale.
I remember this. Yeah, I watched this one.
This was the supplementary episode that we didn't have time to cover, but this one is actually one of my favorite episodes ever.
Yeah, that one, it was interesting because in the first episode that I saw on there, Buffy's mom didn't realize she was the Slayer or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And when I saw the next one, I was like, oh, she's like fully in on it.
So in season, I actually watched the episode where she learns she's the Slayer, and it's akin to coming out.
Is it?
The whole, interesting. It's written like they did it very intentionally.
That's pretty cool.
It was basically like the mom was like, well, have you tried not being a Slayer? Like, it was, and then they fight, and then the mom, and then Joyce is just like, if you walk out this house, don't come back. And then this yeah. is the end of season two, and then she runs away to Los Angeles for a summer. It's very intense.
Interesting.
It was very cool.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, at the end of season two is when Joyce learns that Buffy's the Slayer, because they could only probably draw that shtick on for so long.
No, it's a good finale, for sure.
Yeah. So let's get into the plot.
During a college lecture where Dr. Maggie Walsh is discussing the difference between language and communication, relevant, Buffy has a dream in which Riley kisses her. They are interrupted by a young girl holding a distinctive box, singing a cryptic rhyme about the gentleman.
Yes. How weird was this to watch for you?
It really threw me off. I realized that Buffy had jumped many points in plot by the time I got here.
Mm.
Yeah.
So yeah, I realized, well, because I watched even, it was a further jump for me, because mm-hmm. I had watched the season one episode and then Hush
mm-hmm.
Before going back to watch Nightmares or Killed by Death. So watching this after like a season one episode, I was like, Oh man, I have to warn Anthony.
Yeah. Something about Riley I don't like either. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, because no one liked Riley.
Okay,
like,
good.
Collectively, as like a fan base, no one liked Riley.
He just seems so blank.
He's just a... He's plain.
Yeah, he seemed super plain.
He's very plain, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And, ugh. Anyway. So, Riley and Buffy speak after class, and they almost kiss, but are unable to stop talking. they leave when it becomes awkward. Buffy calls Giles to tell him of her dream and the details of the little girl's rhyme.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think that's another... I didn't like this exchange either.
Mm-mm.
Just because Riley's like, I don't know.
They're awkward.
He's like Wonder Bread, dude. Like,
it's yeah, no, he's very plain. Yeah. He's very, very plain. He's very, like, I mean, he's kind of, he's also even, like, kind of Captain America-y.
Yeah, a little bit, huh? But at Giles' apartment, Xander and Anya argue as Anya is trying to get Xander to tell her that what she means to him, actually. And he is unable to provide an answer because he's Xander.
Because he's angry, can't communicate.
Yeah.
This whole thing is very fun, especially this conversation is fun. I wanted to kind of know your thoughts on it because
it seemed very Whedon.
Yes.
It seemed like super Whedon.
Well, Anya as a character is some people's absolute favorite. She's not my favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
But I also didn't appreciate her bluntness as a teenager. I don't know if I did now, or if I would as much now. But she's very funny.
Yeah, and I kind of can see why they paired her with Xander,
mm-hmm.
in just terms of the way their characters are on their base.
Yeah. Well, Anya's like, well, you don't need me. All you care about is a bunch of orgasms or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, that's how she's the entire show. Like, she's very blunt. Like, she... Because, backstory, she used to be a demon.
Mm.
She was basically a wish-granting demon.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got turned into a human, and now she is stuck to live a mortal life as Anya. And, she is, so because of that, she has no idea of, like, she has no common...
Like, human mannerisms.
Yeah, she has no politeness cues.
Mm-hmm.
She, like, none of it just all goes over her head. So that's why a lot of people really, really like her.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, I can dig that.
Yeah, she's actually my mom's favorite character. So, Willow attends a meeting of the campus Wicca group, hoping to meet others who share her interest in studying witchcraft. But she is sorely disappointed when pretty much they only talk about bake sales.
Again, another good Willow arc right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But Willow raises the subject of spells, but is chastised for pandering to the stereotype about witches performing magic. A shy woman in the group, Tara McClay, starts to speak up to support Willow's suggestion, but falls silent when the attention turns to her. Yeah, interesting.
Tara is...
Is she recurring?
Yeah, so Tara becomes a... she's a recurring character. She becomes a permanent character through season... 6.
Oh, wow. Later on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She's actually, out of all the characters I relate to, it's Tara.
Really? Okay.
Her arc and, like, her whole storyline's amazing. She's great.
Interesting. Because, yeah, she's in here, but I feel like they don't give her a whole lot to
do. Well, this is her first episode.
Oh, that makes sense.
This is her introduction.
Ah, okay.
But that night, as Sunnydale sleeps, white wisps float from each person's mouth to a belfry, where they settle in the box from Buffy's dream as ghoulish skeletal figures with metal-toothed grins and impeccable black suits look on.
The creepy first look, for sure.
Very good. And from that moment on...
No, the honestly, though, the campus atmosphere really, like... It lends to this whole section very, very well.
It gives you the good sleepy town vibe.
Definitely. But in the morning, Buffy and Willow discover they are unable to speak and become visibly distressed. They soon discover that everybody is unable to speak. The group gathers at Giles, where they see the news is reporting that Sunnydale is suffering from an epidemic of laryngitis.
Yeah, seeing the words quarantine in a Buffy episode, I was like, fuck you.
Of course.
Also, very fun. For the sake of not having... I mean, I don't know if it was whether or not they had to include subtitles in a TV show or not, but basically, what they did for this episode is they had all the characters say their word, like say their dialogue out loud, but they just removed the audio and post.
That's cool.
So you, like, so it looks like they're trying to speak, but obviously no sound is coming out. So Buffy and Riley, each concerned that chaos will ensue, find each other while they're attempting to keep order in the streets. For the first time, Buffy sees Riley in his paramilitary role as the agent of the initiative. And in turn, he is still unaware that she's the Slayer, and they exchange this weird look and kiss for the first time before parting to continue their efforts. It's very weird.
Yeah, like, this was very interesting. It felt revelatory, but like...
I think if you had watched, because this is episode 10, so I think if like... Because there's still, like, tension and whatever and, like, character building. So if this... Because, like, also the music in this is really, really good.
Yes, definitely.
So, like, they have, like, the whole whimsical, like... Mm-hmm. So all of Buffy's love interests have a score.
That's
so
cool.
There's an, like, Angel's score.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Riley's score. And subsequently Spike's score, so...
Interesting. But the next night, the ghouls leave the Belfry...
Belfry.
And float into town accompanied by their straitjacket deformed minions who are creepy as fuck.
They are terrifying.
Very, very creepy. They knock on the door of a student. When he opens it, aroused from sleeping, they hold him down and carve out his heart while he tries in vain to scream. Very creepy scene, for sure.
Yeah, this episode's a horror movie, which is why we're covering it. At Giles' apartment, his visiting girlfriend Olivia, this is her first and only appearance, is frightened by one of the gentlemen outside of Giles' window. The following morning, in a campus classroom, Giles uses a series of overhead transparencies, which ages the show tremendously.
Definitely, that's...
to explain to the others who the gentlemen are, and that they steal the townspeople's voices so no one can hear them scream as they gather the hearts they need. And that folklore indicates that they need to have been vanquished before when a princess screamed. The only thing that will kill them is a live human voice. So this sequence is actually the most popular in the episode. It's just fun because Giles is playing the music and he's using the transparencies and just who are the gentlemen? It's so fun.
And there's a jerking off joke.
A jerking off joke which would totally
not
over.
Make it. Would not make it.
And it totally went over my head when I was a teenager.
Oh my god.
Totally over my head. I think I was in middle school, maybe.
That's hilarious.
It went over my head. I was like, I don't understand. Because I knew what she meant.
Yeah, you're just like, clearly.
Clearly she's talking about stabbing. And then everyone else is just like, why are they confused? And then I didn't.
Confused and like a little appalled.
That's true. Giles' face and he's just like.
What? Xander was like, okay, what?
Oh my god. And watching it this time, I was like, oh god, it's a jerking off motion.
After all these years.
I finally get it. It was bad.
But that evening, Anya falls asleep on Giles' sofa while Spike takes a mug full of blood from the refrigerator. Xander enters Giles' apartment as Spike, his mouth wet with blood, bends down to pick something up that he dropped in front of the sofa where Anya is sleeping. Inferring that Spike bit and drank from Anya, Xander punches him until Anya wakes up and stops him. Such a nice little character moment right there.
I had to include it.
It's so TV.
It's so TV.
It's very TV.
Very funny. Also, very obvious sex joke that would not make it into the year of our Lord 2020. Mm-hmm. So on her own, Tara finds a spell to help the town get its voices back and goes out to show it to Willow. On the way to Willow's dorm, she trips, turns around, and sees the gentleman floating towards her. In Willow's dorm, she frantically knocks on doors to which no one will open, and then the gentlemen continue to pursue her. Willow hears Tara's panic knocking down the hall and exits her room as Tara sprints into her. They lock themselves into a laundry room and try to barricade the door with a vending machine, but it's too heavy for them to move on their own.
Willow, injured, sits and concentrates on moving the machine with witchcraft. She fails, but Tara sees what she is doing. They clasp hands and the machine moves swiftly across the room. blocking the door.
It's such a sweet moment.
It is. It's very nice.
It's so cute. Mm-hmm. So Buffy finds two of the gentleman's minions, kills one, and runs after the other. Riley fights his way into the belfry, and while he's embattled, Buffy crashes through a window fighting. He turns to attack and finds himself face to face with Buffy. She fights while he stares unmoving like a bitch.
Yeah. This is, again, there's a lot of, like, threads coming together in this episode, right? You can tell. So when a minion pins her down, she sees and recognizes the box from her dream and gestures wildly for Riley to destroy it. When he does, so the stolen voice escape. I like the, like, he, like, misses completely.
Oh, the first time? Yeah. And, like, she's just like, ugh.
You fucking idiot. With her voice, though, returned after the destruction of this box, Buffy screams until the heads of the gentlemen and their minions explode in a very goopy kind of manner. Yeah.
Green pea soup kind of way.
Yeah. Very, almost a little Evil Dead-y.
I was going to say Exorcist, but yeah.
Yeah. Horror for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. The next day, Tara tells Willow that she is special and has significant power. Meanwhile, Riley comes to visit Buffy in her dorm room, and they sit facing each other, saying nothing. Yeah. That's how the episode ends.
And, of course, Hush is the only Buffy episode that was nominated for an Emmy.
Yes.
No dialogue, or barely any dialogue.
Yeah, 17 minutes.
Fucking insane. But yeah, this actually was one of those episodes I can tell was like in a pivotal part of the show, and it's meant to make you want to watch more for sure.
Yeah, there's a lot to continue after. Mm-hmm,
definitely.
Well, also after, I think the next episode, Tara's in it, and then after that episode, Joss Whedon pulled them aside and told Amber, yeah, mm-hmm. Her name's Amber, and Alice then aside and told them that their relationship was going to become romantic.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Sweet.
So, and then it just went on from there, because then after that, Willow becomes gay, and it's like the best thing ever.
Very innovative television.
Woo! Yeah. But yeah, so let's talk about the legacy of Buffy. So after the series wrapped after, I think, what is it, seven seasons? Yeah, seven seasons. The storyline continued in a series of comic books produced by Joss Whedon and published by Dark Horse Comics, which serve as canonical continuation.
Isn't canonical?
Canonical. Serve as a continuation of the television series.
English is stupid.
English is very stupid. The series, which began in 2007 with Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 8, followed by Season 9 in 2011, and Season 10 in 2014, and Season 11 in 2016, and 12 in 18. Which was the final season of the comic book series.
Damn.
So at the time of Buffy's 20th anniversary in 2017, Whedon expressed fear of reboots potentially happening, commenting that when, quote, something is brought back, even if it's exactly as good as it was, the experience can't be the same. You've already experienced it, and part of what was great was going through it for the first time. You have to meet expectations and adjust it for the climate, which is not easily done, unquote.
That makes sense.
Which I respect. Yeah. Because everyone's trying to remake everything right now. And mm-hmm. If they were to announce, like, a Buffy, like, revisit or, like, a remake, I would lose my shit. I would...
You can't do Sarah Michelle. She was too good. You revisit shit that was, like, well, it was good for its time. Yeah. But this is, like, a not just good for its time
It has show. To be great.
Yeah. This is beyond its time. It's really good.
And then, of course, as we mentioned before, the spinoff Angel was introduced in October of 1999 at the start of Buffy Season 4. The series was also created by Joss Whedon in collaboration with David Greenwalt. Like Buffy, it was produced by the production company Mutant Enemy. At times, it actually performed better than Buffy did, but was criticized for being significantly darker.
Mm-hmm.
So, in September of 2008, Sci-Fi Wire ran an interview with Sarah Michelle Gellar in which she said she would not rule out returning to her most iconic role. Quote, never say never, she said. One of the reasons the original Buffy movie did not really work on the big screen, and people blamed Christy, but that's not what it was. The story was better told over a long arc, Gellar said. And I worry about Buffy being a beginning, middle, and end so quickly. You show me a script, you show me that it works, and you show me that the audience can accept that, and I'd probably be there. Those are what my hesitations are, unquote.
I would love to see her as Buffy again for a little bit.
Just for a little bit.
Just a little taste, you know?
I know. I also realized that the age gap between me and Sarah Michelle Gellar is the same age gap between me and my sister.
Mm. Okay.
And that threw me off. So Buffy the Vampire Slayer also became an academic phenomenon as well. Many academics using the show as a modern expression and exploration of identity, inclusion, and diversity. Literally has its own, like, studies.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Which is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, I don't know. That is
super. Well, especially in this time of TV, too.
Yeah, and then also you have to consider, like, people, like, I don't know, around your age who, you know, followed a super, super traditional academic path, mm-hmm. or like doing like PhDs and shit.
Yeah.
Who are just like, I'm going to research what I know.
This and is what's significant to me.
And
yeah.
It's Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Exactly.
Because that's what was like, you know, available.
Mm-hmm.
In 2012, a study by Slate, Buffy the Vampire Slayer was named the most studied pop culture work by academics, with more than 200 papers, essays, and books devoted to the series.
More than The Simpsons. That's interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah, because The Simpsons is really studied.
Interesting. I wonder why that is.
Huh. Well, whatevs.
Well, I think because a lot of people consider, like, The Simpsons to be, like, it's an adult animated show, quote mm-hmm. unquote. So I think that's probably why people, like, don't consider it to be as influential. But I don't see it that way.
No, I think The Simpsons might be a little more influential.
I agree,
but, like, in
yeah.
terms of...
Well, also, you're like a Simpsons super fan, so...
Well, I mean, just in the realm of, like, actually influencing the rest of TV, though. Like, The Simpsons is pretty impactful.
I don't know a whole lot about that, so I really would...
But, I mean, in terms of, like, what it explores is in terms of what I think contemporary society finds important, I think Buffy probably did a little better. Simpsons is still pretty traditional in some ways.
You know what? I haven't watched enough of The Simpsons to have a formulated opinion on that.
I'm looking at it from, like, what I've seen in Buffy so far, especially right now.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, yeah, they tackle the stuff Simpson would only be doing maybe in 30 minutes in, like, full season arcs.
Ah, yes.
So that's where they're allowed to explore subjects like that a little more.
Okay, I can see that. And then also, I mean, I would also argue that Buffy is a little bit more, like, melodramatic and, like, action-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
So, but also, again, I haven't watched enough of The Simpsons to form an opinion because my mom wouldn't let me watch it.
Right. Wait till we cover Treehouse of Horror, guys.
I'm very excited.
Oh, my God.
You'll have your opportunity to talk about The Simpsons, and I'm very, very excited for that.
Oh, fucking James is going to lose his goddamn mind. He's going to be on that episode.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, we used to quote Simpsons, like, nonstop back in the day.
That'll be a good episode, mm-hmm. then. So, the series, which employed pop culture references as a frequent humor device, has itself become a frequent pop culture reference in video games, comics, and television shows. The series has also been parodied and spoofed. Sarah Michelle Gellar has participated in several parody sketches, including a Saturday Night Live sketch in which the Slayer is relocated to the Seinfeld universe.
Oh my god, let's find that. Oh, that sounds hilarious.
She also added her voice to an episode of Robot Chicken that parodied a would-be eighth season of Buffy. Robot Chicken was also just happened to be created by former Buffy the Vampire Slayer star Seth Green.
Seth Green was the shit also for a while.
Oh, yeah, in the 90s.
Oh, him? Yeah, him, Allison Hannigan, this show, and Sarah Michelle Gellar, obviously. Lots of stuff.
Well, this, I mean, I would argue more so than the soap operas. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is what launched Sarah Michelle Gellar.
No, definitely.
Because this was also at the same time as I Know What You Did Last Summer, mm-hmm. which she was in, and then also Scream 2, which
Scream
she was
2.
In. And then also, you know, Scooby-Doo.
Yep. Jeez.
Which she did all her own stunts in because of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
And then they got her in with the whole Freddie Prinze Jr. and Matthew Lillard crowd.
Yeah, well, I mean, she married Freddie Prinze
Jr.,
did,
yeah.
so mm-hmm. she is in.
But, like, that whole, like, teen group right there, jeez.
Yeah. So she, yeah, I mean, yeah. And then now she lives comfortably somewhere in California and is living her best life.
She's doing great. She earned it. She
yeah,
fucking earned
it's
it.
True. Ugh. So. But I would love to see her, like, revisit Buffy as, like, I don't know, adult Buffy would be interesting.
It would. And then, like, man, I always thought Freddie Prinze Jr. was fucking cool, too.
Yeah.
Like, he was awesome.
Totally.
When I saw him again in Mass Effect 3, I was just like, what?
He's in Mass Effect?
Yeah, well, he's not. He looks different, but it's his voice.
Oh, and you're just like, is that Freddie Prinze Jr.?
Mm-hmm. That's funny. And it was, and they had like a whole videos of him behind the scenes and shit. I'm just like, oh fuck, dude. Like, yeah, he's playing the part.
That's cool. So anyway, that's our little exploration into Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Good job. No, that was nice. It really opened up a lot of memories from
honestly
back in the day.
Based on how much we digressed in this episode.
Yeah,
it stirred up quite a few memories.
I mean, Buffy I believe is emblematic of its time.
Yeah,
like it totally. Really is like it's a touchstone in TV.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the episodes a little bit. Mm-hmm. So these I were in two very different, I wanted to keep the episodes more early in the series. Obviously, yeah. Season 4 is, like, smack dab in the middle. But I kind of wanted to get your, I wanted to get it before it was too, like,
contemporary.
Well, too, like, weaved in, like, storylines.
That makes sense.
Because once you get to season, well, this is season 4. Once you get into, like, season 5, you get the introduction of Michelle Trachtenberg's character.
Who's that?
You don't know Michelle Trachtenberg? Okay. Mm-mm. She also, like, late 90s, early 2000s, like, actress. But she...
I would recognize her face, I'm sure.
I'm going to pull it up right now.
Okay.
But she plays Dawn, who is...
That does sound familiar.
Well, she plays Buffy's sister. To us, she's a brand new character, but mm-hmm. for everyone else... it's like she's always been there, and that's like that's how they start season 5.
That's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, good call on that then, because
then that would have been very confusing.
That would have been super confusing. Even then I was kind of filling the threads anyways as it was.
Yeah. Well, and also like, you know, we get more specialty episodes later, like for example, I think season 6 we get like the musical episode.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Okay. Recognize her very much. Mm-hmm. I knew that. Okay.
Yeah, you know who
yeah,
she is.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like she gets introduced in season 5 completely out, like it's like this big shock where everyone else in the show, like it, like it's just like, oh yeah, Dawn, your kid sister. Mm-hmm. But everyone else who's watching the show is just like, who? And it's part of the plot of season 5.
Oh, so. It's part of the plot. That's mm-hmm. interesting.
It's not like something that the showrunners did where we're just like, we're just going to confuse the fuck out of everyone yeah. and just add a sister.
Mm-hmm. They make it relevant.
It's
in
relevant
the
to the storyline for
that
season 5.
That makes sense.
It's very fun.
Interesting. Okay. Well, my thoughts on the episode, and that actually brings me to another Simpsons analogy, but I'll save it. But,
oh, no.
But in terms of the episodes, I watched 3 of them, and Gingerbread being the middle one.
Mm-hmm.
They all 3 definitely feel like distinctive. It makes each season seem distinctive,
yes.
Like for sure. Like they all have their own vibe to them. You can also see the show evolve because clearly they didn't quite have the budget in season 1 to like do a lot of the stuff they wanted to do, or season 2.
Yeah.
But by 4, you see like a big ramp up in production quality.
Yes.
Like a big ramp.
And then, you know, you get like Doug Jones. You have Doug Jones money.
You have
money.
Doug Jones in there. Yeah. I mean, the creature design itself was good across the board.
Totally.
Like really good. But even going from the season 2 episode to the season 3 episode, well, I'm like, damn, they definitely have a direction like they're going in
here. I think
here.
They're circling.
Yeah. If you guys hear us pause here and there or the sound of helicopters, I'm sure there's some bullshit going on in America that's interfering with our podcast right now.
Which is, you know, it is what it is.
We're just accepting it now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, good old police choppers. Anyways, but yeah, no, I thought the episodes were fucking great. Great examples of telling a story in a condensed manner and
yeah.
only giving the crumbs of what, I guess, arcs would be down the line.
Yeah.
Not enough to really get in the way of the enjoyment of the story itself or to confuse the audience too much. You can kind of get it.
I agree. I think Killed by Death does this really, really well. I think it's not, again, the further along you get in the series, the more ingrained the overarching storyline becomes into like every single episode. But in season 2, you know, you only have a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Like you have like the fight in the beginning and then you have Angel coming to the hospital and then that's pretty much
that's it. Yeah.
And that's it. And then the rest of it is just focused on that story, which is, you know, pretty. That's why it felt
you even
like,
get some exposition into Buffy's past there, which
yes.
is pretty cool.
Again, why it feels very season 1 to me.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, for me, I loved these episodes.
Yeah.
Completely. Like, Hush is obviously like.
Oh, Hush is the goat.
Yeah.
That's a good fucking
Hush
episode.
Hush is everyone's
right there.
Favorite episode, so.
I mean, it's such a well done episode, though.
Yeah.
Like, the production quality
oh, yeah.
is good. it ends in a way that you want to kind of watch a little bit more, even if you're just watching it.
Yeah, even if it's like, even if it ends with freaking Wonder Bread over here.
Yeah, but it also feels like a horror October kind of episode.
Yes.
Like, really.
Yeah, and Buffy only has, like, 3 Halloween episodes.
That's it?
Fun little trivia tidbit. They only have Halloween episodes on even seasons.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Okay.
So season 2, season 4, and season 6.
That's pretty interesting. Well, so. Shit. Yeah, I don't know. They're good examples of what the show does well. And definitely I'm going to probably just pop in some Buffy episodes while I'm chilling.
It is on Hulu, if anyone is curious at all. Check it out.
Yeah, definitely. So how about you? Go feel free to gush as much as you want.
Oh, about Buffy?
Yeah.
Okay, so I've talked about this kind of briefly before, but I feel like it needs more elaboration. But like, Buffy it just means a lot to me.
Yeah.
Like, it was, I would watch certain episodes. Like, there's an episode where Buffy's graduating high school.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the end of season 3. It's called, like, The Graduation or something. And I watched it, like, when I graduated high school.
Yeah.
And, like, it was just very, like, it came out so much, you know, earlier before I went through all of these things. I felt very much like I grew up with Buffy.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was really cool, and it meant a lot to me. And I watched, like, certain episodes, like, that kind of corresponded with, like, hard...
Life events.
Life events that, like, I would be going through, like, college. I'd watch certain, like, Buffy episodes, like...
Yeah, it'll kind of center you a little bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's also, like, there's the end of Buffy that, like, if I ever need to cry,
mm-hmm.
I will watch the last episode of Buffy, because it's just very uplifting and it's very touching and it means a lot to me and it just makes me cry like a little baby. I really love Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
I mean, awesome though. Like, it's such a good, I think it's a good show to have for those stages.
Yes.
Like, definitely. It's
so,
has a heart to it.
Yeah. The entirety of season 7 is Buffy fighting the first evil.
What does that mean? Was like the first evil thing ever?
Like spiritually, like, okay, the first evil. Like, it is this whole concept. It's fucked up. But basically, like, the first vampire, like, and then, like, a whole, like, they're called, like, uber vampires, and it's this whole thing. It's very intense. But because of this, she can't do it herself. So they have a whole group of potential slayers, and these are girls who might be slayers when mm-hmm. she dies or Faith dies. They basically find a way to turn all the potential slayers into actual slayers.
Huh.
And it because through Willow, because Willow, this is the beginning of Willow's, like, magic arc.
Yeah.
Like, she becomes an absolute badass.
I mean, you can definitely tell the seeds are being planted.
Yes.
Like, for sure.
Well, and then also it's with Tara and, like, her, and it's, but there's a lot. There's a lot that happens between A and B. But the moral of the story is Willow,
I can tell it's getting to you right now.
But there's, like, this scene where, like, Willow basically uses this talisman to basically turn all the potential slayers into actual slayers. And Buffy has this huge speech about, because it's, like, every single potential slayer becoming a slayer. And it's, like, beautiful. And, like, I cry like a baby. And it's just, like, it's very cool. And it's very uplifting. And it makes you feel strong.
Yeah, see, that's good, though. Like, I can see why Buffy's so studied, though. Because it definitely builds these things. I like seeing characters grow. And that's probably.
And this is the series for that, because, like, you see Buffy going from being a sophomore in high school
mm-hmm.
to being, like, a full-fledged adult.
That's cool. Yeah.
And, like, and so I would...
It was your Boy Meets World.
Yeah, sure. But, yeah, no, it was just... So it's very cool to watch, and it meant a lot. And then also you get a lot of Faith in season 7, but mm-hmm. Faith is, like, a better person.
Okay, interesting.
And also, we didn't get to say it, but, I mean, like, we are both Eliza Dushku stans in
there. Yeah. We surely are. We gotta find something with her in it just so we can...
Oh, Wrong Turn.
There we go. Wrong Turn. That's what it's going to be at some point.
Yeah, well, it's a horror movie, so we can cover it.
That works.
It. So, yeah. But yeah. So Buffy just means a whole lot to me, and I'm very glad that I had the opportunity to cover it for my birthday month.
Yeah, and I'm glad we got to watch it. Like, honestly, yeah. It's because I always remember Buffy again from just being a kid, and Buffy being a part of pop culture for nerds.
Yeah,
like it really was like the enthusiasts that kind of got it.
I would recommend if you actually want to watch it like sequentially.
Yeah.
I would start probably around Hush, like season 4, and like just go from there.
Just power through.
Just go, because like season 1 and 2 and parts in like 3 are a little rough.
Yeah, I could definitely tell just in terms of the way they're put together.
Although I would actually, I actually take that back. I would start with season 3 because that's where Faith gets introduced.
Okay. And I'm interested now in the Angel arc too, from that fucking beginning of that scene.
Oh man, and you don't just watch the whole
thing. Just watch it. Just watch the whole. Why deprive myself?
It's true. Just watch
the
whole thing.
I can have prime Whedon dialogue.
You also get that prime late 90s like cheesiness, high school dialogue. It's good.
It's gonna capture my soul. I get it. Yeah.
It's great. It's very fun. But then like when you get to the end of it, you're just gonna be like it's great. But okay, well, let's just get to the rating, shall we?
Sure, let's fucking do it.
Rate Killed by Death out of 5 Almost Freddy Krueger hats.
Oh, Almost Freddy Krueger hats. I'm gonna spoil you with all this. These are all 5 stars for me.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I'm gonna give, well, for Hush it's 5 Hellraiser-esque boxes, because that box is very,
yeah, that's super Hellraiser-esque. And definitely deserves, I think, 5 of them for sure.
Yes. So for Killed by Death, I'm going to give it 3.5.
Okay.
It's not my favorite, but I like it. It's scary, but it's like, you know.
Well, since these are my only 2 exposures right now, 3, all the other, but like from what I can see lately, I can see the show itself is like a 5 and these are.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's good, but like there are better.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
No, that makes sense.
And then Hush, I'm going to give it 4.5.
Okay.
Only because I hate Riley.
God, you did bring up a good point with hating Riley. You know?
He gets worse.
And then that means we got to do an episode where we don't say shit.
How would we do that?
I don't know. But we're like, we cover Hush. Yeah, exactly.
We just snap.
And
okay, yeah, I think that just about does it for this week. Is there anything else you want to say before we continue on?
Happy fucking birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Happy birthday at the end. Happy birthday, sorry about America.
I know. Happy birthday, sorry America's in shambles at the current moment.
Yeah, it's kind of tough to like bring the enthusiasm for that. But you know what? Covering a great show here, I think it's worth exploring within the realm of the podcast, because we're going to be doing a couple more TV show episodes here and there. Pretty sure that's going to happen.
Treehouse of Horror.
Treehouse of Horror is for sure. Look out in October. And I don't know. Like, just overall, I always like it when we cover this 90s shit.
Yeah,
like, it really brings me back.
Speaking of 90s, next week.
Yeah, that's next. Next week
next
is going to have...
Next, it's 90s.
Technically.
It's 90s. It's just not American.
Yeah, there we go.
So, assuming we can find it.
Assuming we can find it. If not, then, you know what? Whatevs.
Here's the quick caveat. If we can't find it, I will pick something else that is foreign horror. It just might not be 90s. But next week we are covering a foreign horror film that I love. It's also gay, so...
Birthday month.
So I'm very excited to cover it. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. That was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Killed by Death from 1998, and Hush from 1999. If you like what you heard, please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It's also a great birthday gift. You can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We are on Twitter and Facebook at Horror People Pod. And then we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. And then if you want to find Anthony, he's on Twitter and Instagram at Hyrulean Hustler. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop.
Sweet.
I think that's it for this week.
Where can they find Sarah Michelle Gellar?
I think she's just Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Type her fucking name in Instagram and follow her life.
She's honestly a delight to follow on social media. I have nothing else to add. I don't know. go to Sunnydale.
Value your voice.
Value your voice while you have it. Anyway, thanks so much. Jesus.
In the context of the National American Dialogue right here, value your voice in all respects.
It's true. Use your voice.
Use your voice. That's right.
And that's what we'll leave you with today. Anyway,
in our podcast, that's just our voice.
All right. Bye, guys.
See ya.